This is Ozarks at Large for Tuesday, January 3rd, 2012. I'm Kyle Kellums.
And I'm Antoinette Grajeda. On this edition of Ozarks, a Fayetteville company is in a legal battle to keep its name. A former Arkansas legislator talks to Roby Brock about a recent trip to China he took with other Arkansas political and business figures. And Opera Fayetteville begins its inaugural season later this month.
We'll begin this edition of Ozarks at Large with a story about a local company. If one of your resolutions is to start up a new business in 2012, you may want to be mindful about naming it. As Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich reports, a local organic fast food vendor in operation for the past 2 years now faces a trademark infringement challenge by the world's largest food corporation.
Judy Payne Smith is owner of Lean Green Cuisine Incorporated.
My company is Lean Green Cuisine, and we're located in Fayetteville, Arkansas. We serve healthy, heart-healthy, cholesterol-free food. It's at least 90% organic, and we have gourmet dishes. I have a chef who loves to come up with new dishes all the time.
Her organic vegan kitchen, located on Rolling Hills Drive in Fayetteville, prepares pre-ordered fresh, ready-to-eat meals for weekly pickup and delivery for about 60 families.
It is healthy fast food.
The kitchen, which prepares thousands of meals each week, is closed today, but Payne Smith gives a cook's tour.
Here we keep our vegetables in this refrigerated unit. Some of the ingredients that we use, we have, I think I see parsnips in there, and we've got onions that we keep, tofu. We don't use it every week. I do want to mention that we also purchase locally. We've got our organic and certified naturally grown farmers, and we actually have a farmer who is growing specifically for us, just starting. In a couple of weeks, he's going to have lettuce, fresh lettuce.
And the menu varies each week. Patrons place orders in advance on leangreencuisine.com or Facebook or by calling in.
A sample menu would be lasagna with vegetables and cashew cream cheese. We also had this past week mixed grains and greens, pine nut pilaf. We had black beans with chipotle sweet potatoes, garlicky smashed squash with herbed carrots, corned beans and cabbage. And we had a beet salad, a three-bean tortilla soup, and gingerbread cake. We always have a little dessert.
Judy Payne Smith opened Lean Green Cuisine 2 years ago with the help of a vegan kitchen consultant she met in Nashville, North Carolina. But she came up with the name.
Actually, the first choice was Lean Green Gourmet. And then later, after we had sort of established that, before we opened, a friend of ours came up with Lean Green Cuisine, and we thought, that just flows so well.
She did a web search and found the name novel, but did she trademark it?
That would have been a great idea, but we didn't.
But trademark wasn't a concern, that is, until she got an email from an intellectual property rights attorney representing Nestle, the world's largest food and nutrition company headquartered in Switzerland. Nestle's product line includes the classic chocolate confections, Nescafe coffee, Alpo dog chow, and Beneful dog foods, nutritional drinks such as Boost, Gerber baby foods, Dreyer's ice cream, and Stouffer's convenience and weight management food line, including its popular frozen meals known as Lean Cuisine, launched in 1981. Nestle's attorney said Payne Smith's name infringes on their trademark.
Never thought about it. I never made that connection at all, because green is, you know, it's like Lean Green Cuisine. That doesn't sound like Lean Cuisine to me. I mean, I just never thought about it.
Nor is it close to the Nestle product line, which is meat-based processed frozen foods. And Payne Smith says there is no way the two brands could ever be confused.
So, but at any rate, they seem to be concerned that I might be taking some money away from them. I'm sorry, I have to be kind of ironic when I say things like that, because it amazes me that they just, it seems like they go around looking for small businesses to put out of business or something. It's like this big bully. Someone likened it to Goliath and David. one of my customers did, and that's really pretty accurate. But if I keep thinking about, well, who slayed whom, then lean green cuisine is going to be a winner, whatever happens.
But Nestle disagrees. After querying the company for this story, spokesperson Roz O'Hearn responded via email that lean green cuisine could erode the popular lean cuisine brand equity and that it expects Painsmith to change her company's name. O'Hearn also wrote that Nestle manufactures lean cuisine at a food processing facility in Jonesboro, Arkansas, so proximity also matters. But Judy Painsmith says her narrow profit margin makes the cost of a name change prohibitive.
It would entail changing our sign, which costs several thousand dollars to start with. We would have to change business cards. We'd have to change website.
Perhaps as much as $7,000 to rebrand her company, not including the time to change all tax and licensing paperwork. An online search of the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office website revealed Green Cuisine is trademarked by a California frozen food company, as is Green Lean and Lean Green, which turns out to be a supplement company. Meredith Lowry is a partner with Kiesling and Pieper PLC in Fayetteville. Her firm deals with intellectual property protection, litigation, acquisition of patents, trademarks, and copyright registrations.
When we have a new client come in or someone that is saying that they want to start a new business, our general advice is to have whatever name that they're using for their business or their product, the trademark, to have a clearance check either by us, which is our usual recommendation, or to do that on their own by looking at the records at the United States Patent and Trademark Office. All of the trademarks that have been registered or applied for are available for review online, and sometimes it's an easy search for them to do on their own. Sometimes it can be a little more difficult.
Meredith Lowry uses the word delta as an example.
The use of delta is not recommended in the airline field, but then delta faucets can still exist with Delta Airlines and no one's confused. And that's the real test when it comes to trademarks, making sure the public isn't confused.
And Nestle contends consumers could construe lean green cuisine as perhaps a product line of lean cuisine. So what is a small business owner like Judy Painsmith to do?
The attorney at Nestle said they would give me up to a year to make the change. And the last correspondence I had from them was about 6 weeks ago, stating that they had just looked at my website and saw that I had not made any changes yet. And at that point, I did not reply because I've thought of some options of trying, to avoid the name change, or if not avoid the name change, I really will ask them to fund my changes.
But before she formally submits that request, an attorney she consulted with here in Fayetteville advised Judy Painsmith to wait and see. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
To learn more, visit the United States Patent and Trademark Office of the Department of Commerce at uspto.gov.
The first of the year is a standard time to start something new, a new diet, a new exercise regimen. For many singers, this first month of 2012 is the opportunity to launch a new opera company. Opera Fayetteville will stage its first production inside Stella Boyle Smith Concert Hall on the University of Arkansas campus this month. Tamara Ryan, a Fayetteville native, is the general director of the company. She says Opera Fayetteville will specialize in American opera and open with Little Women. The cast began arriving from around the country Sunday, and the first rehearsals were scheduled for yesterday. Last week, I talked with Tamara about the plans for January 11th's opening night and about what it's taken to create a new opera company. Not exactly something that can happen overnight.
No, it's not, although it was closer to overnight probably than it should have been. I think I always dreamed actually specifically of doing this opera. Little Women is like one of my favorite operas in the world. And I just had it in my head as an idea, and then I moved to Boston this last fall, and I became involved with a company there called Metro West Opera. And it was my first job when I came to the city, and they were just people my age in their early 30s, late 20s, who had decided to start this company, and it never occurred to me before that you could do that, that you could kind of take the reins and make your own art. And I was really impressed with the production, and I thought if it could be so well received and such an important part of the community there in Boston, where they have an exciting arts event they could go to, hundreds of them really they could go to every day, then wouldn't it be a wonderful thing to do here where we don't have an opera company yet?
Well, okay. And that can work in your advantage that there isn't an opera company yet. However, this isn't Boston with a Metro Survey population of 2 million. This isn't Chicago. This isn't Vienna. This isn't Santa Fe, where there's a history. So what do you have to do in Fayetteville?
Well, I think we have to get the word out. I think the great thing about Fayetteville is it's a small place. People know each other. And if you talk to your friends, they'll talk to their friends. And I don't know. We have a great interest in the arts here, and I think there's really the audience for it.
This is an organization. This is a group that wants to produce American opera.
Yes.
And, of course,
yes.
You're starting with Little Women. Why specifically American opera?
Well, I personally have a great passion for American opera, but I also think it's kind of the ticket to the future. I might be in the minority there, but I think as long as when people go to the opera, they're seeing sort of the same 20 Puccini and Verdi operas, then it feels like something irrelevant a little bit to people, I think. And there's so many modern composers doing beautiful, beautiful work that is accessible and exciting to us. And I think the more we think about opera as a living, breathing, growing art form, the more we can kind of take it into the future.
If you go to the website, you see the cast and the people associated with this production. They're from all over.
They are. A lot of them I've had the pleasure to work with before, but we did hold auditions. We had an online audition, so there are a few people I'm excited to meet. But I'm very impressed with their credentials and excited to get started working together.
Online, so through Skype?
There is a website called Yap Tracker, yaptracker.com, which all the young singers know about. It's kind of classifieds for young opera singers, so that's what we did.
Rehearsals begin Monday, just after the new year. Everyone arrives the day before that. Then you get together. What will be the sort of boot camp schedule
it's
from there?
It's going to be all day, every day. We start with a musical rehearsal Monday morning. So we'll do, since there are two casts, we'll do two full run-throughs and see where we are. It's very much an ensemble piece. So as much work as people may have done preparing, I think we'll have a lot of musical work to do together, kind of fitting those ensembles together and making them work. And then we'll start staging that afternoon. We'll be staging all day, every day that week. And then we start our dress rehearsals the weekend. The orchestra comes on Saturday. And then hopefully we'll be ready to go Wednesday.
Will you be able to rehearse in Stella Boyle Smith?
Yes. Yes, we
Since
will.
Since classes That's, are out?
Right. The students are gone, so it's all ours.
You're a Fayetteville native.
I am.
Did you grow
I
up
am.
Going to performances inside Stella Boyle Smith?
No, I didn't. My parents took me to the Walton Arts Center a lot, but my first experience being in an opera was in Stella Boyle. My voice teacher at the time, Holly Gash, was she was getting her master's, and she was playing Violetta in La Traviata. I don't think they did the whole show, but she said, "Well, would you like to be in the chorus?" And it was so exciting. It was so exciting, the costumes and the singing. And, of course, she was like a magical queen to me. So I have a special association with that room.
I looked at your schedule and what you have scheduled for this year. You've got a lot of things. When you're taking on the most immediate project, is that all you're thinking about? Or do you kind of have to look ahead and with works that you'll be...
Plan ahead. Well... No, I do not do a lot of planning ahead. I think when I'm in the middle of an artistic project, I'm really spending all day thinking about it, and then once I'm finished, it's time to start on the new thing. I don't know if that's always the best strategy, but
it's probably the one that most of us do follow.
Yeah.
Yes. Also, on your website, there's a YouTube video of a performance of yours. It's it's in a recital sort of setting. What's the difference for you between a recital, where it's one sort of performance,
right,
as opposed to being in an opera with a full production?
Oh, for me, opera is just where it's at. It's so different. And I think the main thing that I love about it is the team aspect. I think the ensembles are always my favorite part. And when you're in an opera, it feels like you're part of this magical musical organism. And if one person succeeds, everybody succeeds. You're all supporting each other. You're making this wonderful thing together. And you're somebody else. You're this different character. And it's very liberating and exciting. And somehow always, I love being in a recital situation because I think that the communication can be a little more direct with the audience. But it feels, it's a very bare sort of naked to be up there being yourself and singing this piece. It's really different from being part of this magical artistic family.
Anything else we should know?
Well, I think one thing that it would be exciting for people to know, or at least important, is that this take on Little Women is very, it's sensitive and modern. It's very different from the traditional story. It has all the material of the traditional story, but Adamo chose really to focus sort of on the psychological journey of Jo and on her learning to grow and change and to let go. And he makes an interesting use of time. The opera starts in one scene and it ends in that same scene sort of after journeying with Jo through her emotional process.
Do you think it, for someone perhaps who's never seen an opera live, or maybe only one, and it was one of those Puccini or Verdi staples, the fact that they might be coming into this performance knowing the work it's based on, knowing the story, will that, you think, be a nice entryway?
I think it will. I think it will make it all the more exciting. Because on the one hand, you have this familiar story, you love the characters, you know who they are. But on the other hand, it's a completely new and interesting dramatic treatment of that story. So there's a lot of new material to be enjoyed.
And Bob Mueller's the conductor.
He is.
How did you connect with him?
I've known Bob for a long time. I grew up going to Good Shepherd Lutheran Church, and he was the music director there. So I did a lot of my first solo singing under his direction. And then I took a year off before I went to college. I went to Swarthmore College, but I wanted a year to settle a little bit before I moved on to the next stage of my life. And during that time, I worked in his house as a housekeeper. I worked at Smoothie King on Dixon Street, and then half the day I worked his wife as Tess Delaplane. She's the head of our orchestra. It was exciting to live with music professors, and I think it gave me sort of a model for what being a musician was like.
All right. Thank you very much.
Oh, thank you.
Tamara Ryan is the general director of Opera Fayetteville and talked with me last week.
The first production of the opera company will be Little Women, and it will open Wednesday, January 11th, and continue through Saturday the 14th. All performances are inside the Stella Boyle Smith Concert Hall and will begin at 7:30. Seating is general admission, and tickets are $25.
For more information about the production of Little Women or the opera company as a whole, you can go to operafayetteville.org.
Earth, sky.
In 2011, a team of scientists rediscovered the rarest species of bumblebee in the United States.
This rare bee species is known as Cockerell's bumblebee. It was last seen in 1956 in the White Mountains of New Mexico. Then, in August 2011, scientists from the University of California, Riverside, collected three samples of the bee on weeds along a highway north of Cloudcroft, New Mexico.
The scientists said most bumblebees in the U.S. are known from dozens to thousands of specimens, but not this species. Again, we've just seen three since 1956. Entomologists, or scientists who study insects, apparently don't go very often to the part of New Mexico where the bee lives. Plus, the species was ignored for some years because scientists thought it was only a regional color variant of another well-known species.
But now Cockerell's bumblebee is accepted as a species in its own right, and the 2011 discovery means it's making a comeback in the world of bee studies. This species is known, by the way, from an area of less than 300 square miles, about 800 square kilometers. That gives Cockerell's bumblebee the most limited range of any known bumblebee species in the world.
For more, come to earthsky.org and search for Rare Bee. EarthSky is a clear voice for science.
We're at earthsky.org.
This is Ozarks at Large. Late last year, the Arkansas Chamber of Commerce led an exchange trip of state business leaders to China. Among the travelers, businessman, government relations consultant, and former legislator Ron Fuller. Last week, he sat down to talk to Roby Brock from our content partner TalkBusiness.net about what the group learned during their trip and what the future of business between Arkansas and China might look like.
You know, I never saw so many people in close proximity in all my life. It was just amazing, the miles and miles and miles of 50 and 60-story buildings everywhere you looked, and massive amounts of cars, bicycles, motorcycles in the larger cities. Now, you know, considerably different out in the countryside, but it was just amazing the amount of people that were there. We motored by bus across to a couple of different cities, did a couple of 3 and 4 hour bus rides, which I wish I had the bus concession in China. There's buses everywhere.
Well, tell me, Ron, what did you learn?
One thing I learned is that I sure do love this country, and I'm certainly glad to live in Arkansas. China, to me, and I've traveled a lot in the world. I've been down the Caribbean, I've been to Cuba, been to Haiti, some of the former Soviet republics, been in Europe a little bit. I've never been anywhere, Southeast Asia, I've never been anywhere in the world that I have seen such extremes of wealth now and extremes of poverty. We stayed, in 5-star, 6-star hotels, chrome and glass, beautiful, you know, edifices with Aston Martins and Bentleys and what have you outside, and extremely rich Chinese. You looked, people dressing like they were in Paris. And very close to this, you know, just a little ways down the street, literally extreme poverty with people hawking and selling things on the street, living in basically, you know, small hovels, rundown little buildings, everything very much next to each other. The extremes between poverty and wealth were probably bigger than anywhere I've ever seen on Earth. To me, China appears to be paying a real price for all this massive, success we read about. During some of our 4 and 5 hour bus trips, we passed areas out in the country. We're on brand new interstates, you know, 4 lanes each way, out into the middle of nowhere, but brand new highways with pollution like I've never seen on both sides. Nasty, dirty rivers, lakes, the ponds all seem fouled, and every 10, 15 miles, you know, you've got a gigantic plant that seemed to be belching out some sort of smoke, I'm assuming producing electricity. Massive power lines running literally everywhere. Literally torn down and abandoned small cities. And 2 miles down the road, you'd have a quad of 25 or 30, 50-story buildings, with factories actually ringing these buildings. Well, some of those, too, you'd see were vacant. And we asked our guide what that was. And he said, well, they weren't manufacturing things there anymore, so the government just basically picks the entire community up and moves you somewhere else. So they had, it's been on television a little bit about the ghost cities in China. And that's what these were. It was completely abandoned, brand new cities because the economy had changed, so they moved people somewhere else. It was just amazing.
Well, we hear so much about the competition from China and how America has to change to compete with this emerging superpower. What's your takeaway from where America stands versus where China is? Are we as competitive with China as we need to be?
Well, I don't know that we can be on the level that they're at. I mean, you've got sweatshops there producing massive amounts of things. China's tariff situation, for example, everybody loves Buicks and Cadillacs in China, but a Cadillac is going to cost you $200,000 to $250,000 in China. There's a lot of inequity in the way their government, of course, treats us, and you know they own all our debt or a lot of our debt. I guess I came back almost not as worried about we're going to have to worry about the way things are going. We're going to have to do something else, though. We can't compete with that many people with that much manufacturing of smaller things. We're going to have to literally figure out, I think, how to do something else. It's disconcerting, but I'm not so sure China's not going to collapse at some point under its own weight. As I said, the price they're paying for progress over there in the, I guess we were there 10 days and maybe saw the, a really clear day like we have almost every day here in Little Rock that it's not raining. We only had really nice clear days, maybe 6.5, or maybe 3.5 days. We had 6 days of what I thought was smog and kind of foggy conditions. Beijing was kind of blue-gray. Down in Shanghai, things appeared to be a little yellow sometimes with the air. It just wasn't a pretty place environmentally. They revere their history, beautiful things, beautiful temples. And it's interesting to be in the markets, Mao Zedong and the Chinese leadership of old. They're kind of cult figures now. You see some of the young people still wearing a Chairman Mao suit and everybody else has changed. Or you see a silk jacket with a young person that's got a Burr haircut, but he's got Chairman Mao's picture on the back, And they sold the little red books. It's a very unique, interesting country.
And what is that saying they attribute to Chairman Mao?
Well, I know what you're talking about. We had two different guides, and they were both guys in their 30s, one maybe 40. Very interesting people. Obviously, worked for travel agencies that worked for the government. The government, literally, if you're in China, you're doing business with a communist government. I never saw a hammer and a sickle while I was there. I think maybe I saw one. But it's changed. They've got capitalism down to an art. Our guide made a funny remark. He said, it was Chairman Mao, who is revered like George Washington, Chairman Mao made us free. And many of you remember Deng Xiaoping, and I'm sort of a history student. He was the one that worked with Kissinger and Carter, Kissinger and later Nixon and what have you, to open up China to the West. They say, well, Mao made us free, but Deng Xiaoping made us rich. And they're serious about it. Everywhere we got off a bus, somebody was trying to sell us a knockoff Rolex watch or a knockoff Gucci bag or something. I mean, you'd have, our guide called them mosquitoes. You'd have 20 or 30 people descend on you sometimes when you got off the bus. And they took us to all of these state-owned stores for what they called shopping opportunities. So they've got capitalism down to a science. And Roby, I think what I saw going on in the background is they are so happy with where they're at. Probably people from their 30s on up that do remember something of the culture, or 30 on back, that do remember something of the Cultural Revolution and the way that country was structured, the freedoms that they have now, that we wouldn't feel very free, but they do. And I think they're appreciative. Our guide did say a couple of things that I thought was pretty interesting at times. He said, well, we don't, Mr. Fuller, we don't fear America. We want to be friends with America. He said, there is one thing that we're worried about. And I said, well, what's that? And he said, there are so many McDonald's over here. We're worried about them making our children fat. He said, the kids don't want to eat rice and beans anymore. They want to eat, they want to eat McDonald's and go to Starbucks. And there is a Starbucks on every corner.
Ron Fuller is a businessman, government relations consultant, and former Arkansas legislator. He recently took part in an exchange trip to China with other Arkansas business representatives. That trip sponsored by the Arkansas State Chamber of Commerce. He discussed the trip with Roby Brock from our content partner, TalkBusiness.net. Support for content from TalkBusiness.net on Ozarks at Large is provided by Mitchell Williams Law, providing strategic counsel on a variety of sophisticated legal matters since 1954. Mitchell Williams Law Firm combines decades of diverse professional experience to clients across the United States. Today, the firm employs nearly 80 attorneys from four offices in Arkansas, Texas, and New York. Online at MitchellWilliamsLaw.com. And the Bank of the Ozarks. More information at BankOzarks.com. And by Verizon, offering a wide selection of productivity-enhancing tablets for small business, including the Apple iPad. More information available at a Verizon communication store or online at VZW.com/small business.
This is Ozarks at Large. Ahead on the program, Becca Bacon-Martin explains why the end of the holiday season is the perfect time to be hopeful. And a question about the 49th state is your chance today to win Malco tickets, a Tim Ernst 2012 calendar, and a CD from the Fort Smith Symphony.
The website ArkansasGasPrices.com says the average cost of a gallon of gasoline in the state jumped nearly a nickel in the past week. The average cost on Sunday was $3.09. That compares with the national average that's increased about 2.5 cents per gallon in the last week to $3.25 per gallon.
The University of Arkansas says a goal of more than $83,000 for new uniforms for the UA band has been met and exceeded. The $83,500 was raised to match an initial gift of the same amount from the Jim and Joyce Faulkner family of Little Rock, longtime University of Arkansas supporters. A release for the university this morning says the goal total amount raised to match the Faulkner gift was more than $110,000. The band has more than 350 members.
A small earthquake near Prague, Oklahoma, was recorded this morning by the U.S. Geological Society. The quake registered 3.2 on the Richter scale and was centered near the small town that's about 50 miles east of Oklahoma City. No injuries or damage reported in connection with that quake.
The University of Arkansas Fort Smith men's basketball team ended a three-game losing streak last night, defeating Hillside Baptist College 115-71 in Stubblefield Arena. The Lions next play Thursday night at Oklahoma Panhandle State. Meanwhile, the University of Arkansas Razorback men's team will host Savannah State tonight in Bud Walton Arena. It's the final tune-up before Arkansas begins SEC play Saturday night in Fayetteville against Mississippi State.
150 years ago, Camden merchant John Brown, whose diary remains one of the best accounts of civilian life in Civil War Arkansas, was gloomy on New Year's Day. Brown wrote, "I look upon the question of slavery, the all-absorbing question now, powerful as it is, as only a pretext for the overthrow of this government. Even that could not have shaken it if the government had remained in its purity, but alas, every department was rotten. A few patriotic statesmen of the nation were thrown out of power by democracy, and corrupt demagogues filled all the offices. The government thus was ready to fall to pieces. The sound part of the people had lost their respect for it, and the reckless desired any desperate change. Hence, it was an easy matter to overthrow it, for no free government can survive patriotism long." To learn more about Civil War Arkansas and the 150th anniversary of the American Civil War, visit ArkansasCivilWar150.com. The Arkansas Civil War Sesquicentennial Commission is an agency of the Department of Arkansas Heritage. I'm Mark Christ.
The carols have been sung, the office parties long over, and the resolutions made. The holiday season, save for a few bowl games left to go, is all but over as the workforce returns to the office. But for our friend and contributor Becca Bacon-Martin, the end of the holiday season is just as good as any time to think about what could lie ahead.
Bah humbug. Are there no prisons? Are there no poorhouses? How can you celebrate Christmas in a world where shoppers attack each other? Where children go hungry and are beaten for crying and pets are left tied to trees to starve? Where there's more debate over the political incorrectness of Merry Christmas than there is over war, ecology, and the sad state of the economy? What is there to be happy about anyway? For most working folks, a cheeseburger and fries cost an hour's wages, and a coat for your child is more than you make in a day. For those of us who are rich by our parent standards, we live in constant chaos. The dishes are dirty, the clothes are in piles, the floors are unswept, and the beds unmade because we're running too hard, juggling too much, trying to keep up with the Joneses or keep up with our own expectations. Yuppies exist on carry-out cuisine, eaten in the SUV while they drive Junior to soccer practice, Sis to cheerleading lessons, the dog to daycare. Shopping is the most popular recreation, and personal debt is unimaginably, ridiculously high. There's little time for family, even less for friends. If you're lucky, you might get off work by 5 o'clock on Christmas Eve, but be back all the earlier the day after, Bob Cratchit. 'Tis the season for the after-Christmas sales. Or you could look at it as the season for renewal, and I don't mean for your credit cards. Quite frankly, the last few years haven't been easy for anybody. I've been through crises with friends and loved ones, watched people I care about move on and move away, and I still feel betrayed by people that I thought mattered. Last year we lost Dan's dad, my dad in every way but biology, and the ache is constant and persistent. I've grown another year older, and I wonder, as does everyone at this age, if this is all there is. And if so, why did I work so hard to get here? And just when a great love had appeared in my life, he was diagnosed with cancer. A 10-hour surgery, plus two more shorter ones, 12 days in the hospital, and 11 more days of radiation treatment, as I say this to you. And yet I cannot help but believe in the magic of Christmas. It's a message so powerful that it should transcend religious differences and even the Parker pony shortage. A long time ago, in a land far away, a baby was born to bring hope to the world. Whether he was the Son of God, as Christians believe, or merely a child like any other, doesn't really matter. Either way, he reminds us that every baby is a new beginning, a chance to change the world. And even as adults, we can start over, seek salvation, as it were, alter our attitudes and reshape our lives. It's really no more complicated than this. Is your cup half empty or half full? I could look at my life and simply give up in despair. I will never get it all done. The house will never be perfect or even tidy. The piles of laundry will always get bigger. Apparently, Lily will never be house trained. On the other hand, I'll never get caught up at work either. There will always be more I wish I could have done, things I wish I had done differently, mistakes I wish hadn't been made. And there will never be enough hours in the day to make home and work balance harmoniously. By the same token, I could look at my daughter, known to readers for years as the Little Queen, and I could see all the things she will never do or be, and I could find only grief. Or I can see the world through her eyes. The magic of music, the annual miracle that brings her Christmas lights back to the Fayetteville Square. The simple joy of popcorn, shrimp, and chocolate, not together. I can believe that happy hours with a man I love matter more than counting how many we may have in the future. I can be glad that while my job will always be stressful, I'm doing work I consider important and doing it with people I enjoy and respect. And I can rejoice in the message that is the same whether it comes from the Christ child or a beautiful child like mine or yours. This is not all there is. This is all we make it. The world is not a perfect place. Bad things happen to good people. There's plenty of loss, plenty of woe, plenty of heartache to go around. And some days it's too overwhelming to contemplate. That's when you need a little Christmas. Be sure you stock up while it's in season.
Becca Bacon-Martin is the features editor for Northwest Arkansas Newspapers. She'll return with her daily tips on local events and entertainment in the region on Ozarks at Large beginning on Friday. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums.
And I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
And for the first time in 2012, trivia question.
Okay.
Winner today will receive two tickets to any Malco theater in the area.
Mm-hmm.
Tim Ernst 2012 calendar, because let's face it, you've only missed a couple of days on that.
Sure.
So still time to put that to good use. And a
CD
from the Fort Smith Symphony. This is William Grant Still. Symphonies numbers 4 and 5. This is not the latest CD the Fort Smith Symphony put out. That's just been released in the last couple of weeks, but it's the one previous to that.
Okay.
So Fort Smith Symphony CD, tickets, the movies, and a calendar.
Okay, sounds good.
Okay. Today is the anniversary of Alaska's admission into the United States.
Ah, I did not know this.
It was on this day in 1959 that Alaska became the 49th state in the Union.
Mm-hmm.
Now, everybody knows that Alaska ranks first when it comes to
being cold.
Well, that, yes, as well as land size. It's the biggest state. However, it ranks 47th in population.
Uh-huh. So, because of the cold.
Well, yes, and it's, well, yes, partly, absolutely. So, according to the 2010 census, 710,000 people lived in Alaska.
710?
Thousand.
Oh, thousand. I was like, wait, what?
No, 710,000. I may not have said thousand, but anyway, 710,000. So today's question is not a multiple choice.
Oh.
Just call and tell me which one of the three, any of the three states that has a smaller population than Alaska.
Okay.
Not D.C., which does, but we're talking actual, honest to goodness states.
So I need three states?
No, any one of the three.
Any one of the three.
If you name any one of the three states that has a smaller population. Okay.
Okay. So give us a call at 800-522-5823. That's 800-522-KUAF, and good luck.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Tuesday. It's the 3rd of January, 2012. It's the birthday of Lucretia Mott, born Nantucket, Massachusetts, 1793. She was a teacher in a Quaker boarding school near Poughkeepsie, New York, and quit when she found out that she was being paid less than half of what the male teachers all made simply because she was a woman. She got into the women's rights movement, and along with Elizabeth Cady Stanton, she organized a convention for women's rights, the Seneca Falls Convention of 1848. Lucretia Mott, who wrote, "The world has never yet seen a truly great and virtuous nation, because in the degradation of women, the very fountains of life are poisoned at their source." It was on this day, 1841, Herman Melville, 21 years old, set sail aboard the whaling vessel Acushnet from the port of New Bedford, Massachusetts, bound for the Pacific. He didn't have much experience as a seaman, but he loved the sea. He was eager to learn. Whaling was still big business, 1841. Whale oil from whale blubber, the most widely available fuel for lights, also one of the most popular lubricants. He learned the ins and outs of whaling. He helped to harpoon the whales, harvest them, process their oil, also listened to the stories that his fellow seamen told, particularly of a legendary white sperm whale called Moby Dick. And all of it gave Herman Melville material that he was to use in writing his book Moby Dick. It was on this day, 1870, construction began on the Brooklyn Bridge, designed by John Roebling, spanning the East River between Manhattan and Brooklyn, the world's first steel suspension bridge and at the time the longest, 1,600 feet between its towers. At least 20 men lost their lives in the construction. It was very dangerous work. The workers were lowered to the bottom of the river in airtight wooden boxes to dig down to the bedrock, sometimes through as much as 78 feet of mud and boulders. It was hot, uncomfortable, the air pressure very high. Workers suffered the bends when they were brought up. The bridge opened in 1883 and for several years was the tallest structure in the Western Hemisphere, still an enduring landmark in New York City. And today is the birthday of J.R.R. Tolkien, born to English parents in South Africa, 1892. His father was working in a bank there. Tolkien, fascinated with languages, went to Oxford, studied classics, later English languages, came across an old English poem with a couplet, "Hail, Arendelle, brightest of angels over Middle-earth sent to men." And Tolkien's The Lord of the Rings takes place in Middle-earth and has a character named Arendil the Mariner. One day while grading exams, Tolkien discovered that a student had left one page in the exam booklet blank, and Tolkien wrote on the page, "In a hole in the ground there lived a hobbit," which became his book, The Hobbit. Here's a poem for today by Mark Strand entitled Harmony in the Boudoir. After years of marriage, he stands at the foot of the bed and tells his wife that she will never know him, that for everything he says there is more that he does not say, that behind each word he utters there is another word and hundreds more behind that one. All those unsaid words, he says, contain his true self, which has been betrayed by the superficial self before her. "So you see," he says, kicking off his slippers, "I am more than what I have led you to believe I am." "Oh, you silly man," says his wife, "of course you are. I find that just thinking of you having so many selves receding into nothingness is very exciting. That you barely exist as you are couldn't please me more." A poem by Mark Strand, Harmony in the Boudoir, from his new collection, Almost Invisible, published by Alfred A. Knopf and used by permission here on The Writer's Almanac, produced by our technical director, Thomas Scheutzker. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
And time now to answer our trivia question. Again, the winner will receive two tickets to any Area Malco Theater, a Tim Ernst 2012 calendar of his photographs, and a CD, William Grant Still CD from the Fort Smith Symphony. Not their latest one, but the one before that.
So still good.
Still very good. The question, in honor of Alaska's admission to the Union on this date in 1959, Alaska is 47th in population, according to the 2010 census, among U.S. states. I just wanted to hear one of three states that has fewer people in it than Alaska. We've had a few minutes to think about it, Antoinette. Do you have a guess?
Rhode Island?
You know what? You would think.
Because it's tiny, right, but it's not. But no. Would it be something? Okay, then I want another guess. Okay. How about Wyoming?
Yes, actually, Wyoming has the smallest population of any of the 50 states, 563,000. Also acceptable, North Dakota, with a population of 672,000, and Vermont, 625,000.
Okay, there you go.
So there you go. Washington, D.C. would have fewer people, but it's not a state.
Right.
Okay.
KUAF is supported by Ella's Restaurant, located at the Inn at Carnell Hall on the University of Arkansas campus. Ella's offers a variety of fine dining experiences during breakfast, lunch, dinner, and weekend brunch. An Indian lunch buffet is served each Tuesday. Menus, event schedules, and more information available at ellasrestaurant.com.
If your resolution for 2012, if you do that sort of thing, if the resolution was to become involved with something, three ideas quickly. Poets Northwest will begin the new year with a focus on childhood memories. Anyone interested in writing, reading, or enjoying poetry is welcome. You can bring your own poetry or just come and listen. The next meeting takes place January 7th, which I think is Sunday.
Saturday.
Saturday. It takes place January 7th, Saturday, from 1 until 3 at the Jones Center for Families in Springdale. For more information about Poets Northwest, 442-8028. Meanwhile, the Ozark Arts Council will hold auditions for the spring season of the Ozark Children's Choir Monday the 9th at the Lyric Theater in Harrison. For more information about that, ozarkartscouncil.org. And finally, an open mic night will be held at Dewey's Cafe at the Fort Smith Public Library Thursday, January 12th. It takes place that night from 6 until 8. You can showcase your talent or just come and listen. Poets and musicians will have 5 minutes to read or perform one or more piece. You have to sign up at the door. For more information about that or anything that takes place at the Fort Smith Public Libraries, you can call 783-0229 or go to the library's website, fortsmithlibrary.org.
A listener-supported service of the Department of Journalism and Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas. This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Rogers, Fort Smith, Snowball.
Snowball?
Yep.
And that is...
Thirsty County?
Yes, I have been to Snowball. I was working on a story in Witz Springs, and then I was going to head up north to my parents' house in Baxter County. And when you get to Snowball, take a right. You go to Marshall.
What's in Witz Springs that you were working on?
Well, Witz Springs at that time had the smallest school district in the state of Arkansas. They would have graduating classes at times of one or two students. And this particular year was near the end of Witz Springs High School. Their basketball team, their high school basketball team had just five players.
We only need five.
That's true. Three boys, two girls.
Yes.
But the sad thing that had happened is their indoor gymnasium had burned down during the summer. And so this was a story about these five kids who were the basketball team, three boys, two girls, and they had to practice outside and have no home games.
Oh, sad.
So I talked to the coach and the players. And
we'll
so
have to find that story. I can listen to it.
We will. We will. We'll find that it's somewhere.
Dig it out of our archives somewhere.
In the archives. Let's see. Tomorrow, you and me again.
Yeah.
Here for a brand new edition of Ozarks at Large. That's right. Did you have a good break?
Yeah, it was... I wasn't as productive as I would have liked to have been, I feel like.
That's what a break's for.
Being productive, not being productive.
Not being productive.
Yeah, well, I don't know. Had Christmas stuff with family, New Year's stuff with a lot of out-of-town friends, so that was all good. Did some shopping, of course.
Of course.
Of course. What else did I do? Oh, I got to see It's a Wonderful Life at Theater Squared.
Yes, I... Unbelievably, I did not see the production. I think
did you not?
I did not have... Between family and out-of-town friends and work, I didn't have a free night during the whole run.
Oh, I believe that because I barely made it the one night I went. And they were selling out like crazy because there was a day I was going to go with a friend. I think it was a Thursday, and they were sold out. I'm like, okay, I'll try Friday. And they were down to like four tickets.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, good
for them. So good for them. Yeah, it was good. So now I have seen it at least in play format so
there
people
you
can stop mocking me. yeah.
And I want to remind or thank Washington County Elementary in Fayetteville. They have asked me to come be the moderator or host of their spelling bee on Friday.
Oh, cool.
Yes. So we'll find out just how many words fourth and fifth graders can spell that I cannot.
They can probably. It'll be pretty impressive. What did you do over the break?
I went to Kentucky to see my wife's family and had some out-of-town friends that we took to Crystal Bridges. They had not seen Crystal Bridges.
What did they think?
They loved it.
See,
they wish they'd had more time.
I had an out-of-town friend who his girlfriend was an art major, and so I was like, okay, I want your opinion on this because I have no reference at all. Mm-hmm. But she thought the collection was quite good, and the building was very well designed, and she was just nothing but positive things to say.
Crystal Bridges announced yesterday or today, 90,000 people have walked through the door since they opened.
Really?
90,000.
Wow.
All right.
That's impressive.
Thank you, Antoinette.
You're welcome.
Back tomorrow. And we're going to end with my favorite song about Alaska, since we're talking about Alaska. This is Michelle Schacht and Anchorage.
I took time out to write to my old friend. I walked across that burning bridge. Mailed my letter off to Dallas, but her reply came from Anchorage, Alaska. She said, hey girl, it's about time you wrote. It's been over 2 years, you know, my old friend. Take me back to the days of the foreign telegrams and the all-night rock and roll in Asia. We were wild then. Hey, Shell, you know it's kind of funny.